You are listening to the Health Hack Podcast, powered by Lumen and hosted by myself, Caroline Pierce. As an athlete, sports scientist, and sports presenter, I am passionate about health and how we can unlock the skills to hack our full potential. Each episode, I'll be joined by a leader in the health and well-being world to learn how they've come to understand their body and turned that knowledge into power that could help you too. My guest today epitomizes what it means to be a strong and successful woman. She's a former army soldier turned commander of the American Legion. In fact, she's only the second ever woman to hold that position at the Hollywood Post. She is a personal trainer and a nutritionist and quite the athlete too. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show, Jennifer Campbell. Jen, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, pleasure. Look, you are a real life GI Jane, or GI Jen, as we like to call you. And this army life, I mean, It's not many women do it. It's pretty unique. And what came first in your eyes, the strength to go into that male-dominated, tough world? Or do you think it bred that strength into you after your time serving in the army?
I think it's probably a little bit of both, but probably more of the latter. It was one of those things where, I was always an athlete growing up and things like that. Typically, fairly more male-dominated. But obviously, on my track teams, my soccer teams, I was always with women. And, you see strong women, strong work ethics and things like that. But joining the military was never like a lifelong goal. It was just kind of one of those things where it was an opportunity to help pay for school, and always been very patriotic. And a lot of my family had served. So it was just one of those things where I was like, okay, I'll give this a shot. And going in and really seeing kind of like what you were capable of, and that I could do it just as well as my male counterparts was really encouraging. And I think, kind of there's a need to prove yourself being in male dominated roles. You kind of have to be stronger, better, faster, more knowledgeable, just because,
Yeah. Yeah. And we talk about that. I similarly work in a very male dominated environment with the UFC reporting that I do. So I agree with all of that. There's almost a sense sometimes to have to prove yourself a little bit more. And then you made that transition after the army, you made that transition into the fitness world. You were an athlete, like you say, prior. So how did that come about? Where did that passion for living that sort of fit, healthy lifestyle come from?
Well, that's kind of like always just been my lifestyle. And my undergraduate degree in school was communication studies and business administration. So getting out, I really felt like I needed to use my degree. And I had a boyfriend at the time who was a personal trainer, and he was a former college athlete and everything as well. So he's like, you really need to get into this. I was like, no, I've got to use my degree. I spent a lot of money on it. I need to use it. And I was in corporate America, and I was really just kind of miserable. And that's when I decided to give this a try. And really quickly after getting into the personal training sphere, I really discovered that nutrition was really where I found my passion. So I went back to school, got my master's in nutrition education, and really kind of started down that path. And just being mindful with what I eat, and just trying to have a healthy balance was just something that just, continuing to be fit. And that's just part of my lifestyle. I work out because I genuinely love it, not because I have to do it. So I'm fortunate in that respect.
I know you do live and breathe everything that you talk about, and I can't wait for us to get into some of these health hacks in a short while. But as a bit of a background, Jen and I have known each other for around 6 years now. And I met her when a mutual friend of ours, a UFC fighter, Uriah Hall, organized a hike up Runyon Canyon in Los Angeles. And I just remember thinking, who is this crazy woman who's making us sprint all the inclines all the way to the top, leaving us all in her dust? And but we soon bonded over our love of training and, all things active, became good friends and training partners to this day. But I want you to get to know Jen a little bit better as well. So before we delve into all her fantastic tips, we're going to do a quick fire round, Jen. So I just want a few little kind of snippets, and I just want the quickest thing or first thing that comes into your mind.
Sure.
With all of these questions. So let's go. Do you eat first or exercise first in the mornings?
Because I do work out in the mornings usually, I usually exercise first. I try to do it fairly fasted.
What's your number one way to boost your metabolism?
Variation in both diet and exercise.
We're going to have to dig into that a little bit more. Your go-to dish for a healthy meal?
I love soup. So I make a vegetable soup, and that's my go-to anytime. It's full of fiber and water, and it just makes me happy.
Key to getting a good night's sleep?
Ooh, kind of powering down and turning the distractions off, but also proper hydration. If I'm not properly hydrated, I will not sleep well.
Okay. That's a good one. and your biggest motivator to living a healthy life, your purpose?
I really think just, especially as we age, just feeling good and confident on both the inside and the outside. You know, I think earlier in my life, I would have said it's more about the outside, but now it's, you know, I feel it.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, let's delve into all that a little bit more. And I want to start talking to you, with you about sort of diet and nutrition, because you said there, you know, you exercise first, you know, you do exercise fasted. And I know this was a change that you made during the pandemic, wasn't it? You switched up to doing intermittent fasting. Why was that?
You know, I was just trying to shake things up again. My whole world had kind of been just, you know, turned upside down with the pandemic. I wasn't able to get as much movement as, I mean, for a long time out in here in Los Angeles, even outdoor spaces were kind of, you know, closed off. We couldn't get out to the hiking trails and things like that. And you had to wear a mask outside. And so thinking about running, you know, long distance with a mask on was really just kind of terrible. So I started thinking like how I could change things and experiment. And, you know, the intensity of which I was working out was just different. So I was like, I'm going to give this a try. And for me, I was always like, I eat breakfast. I don't skip breakfast. I don't ever do it. I would get up super early. I would make my veggie omelets. I'd have my oatmeal and fruit and my green tea and all of that. So this was a big, big change for me. And I, you know, even for the longest time before that, I was absolutely, fasting will not work for me. Just from a lifestyle base, I can't do it.
I remember you saying, I'd never do this.
And it took a couple tries. I think, you know, also too with life, with the pandemic, my habits were changing as far as, you know, the way I was eating throughout the rest of the day, especially dinner and happy hour, because I didn't really have a whole lot else to do. So, you know, things just really changed. And so I think with, you know, those changes made it hard at first. So I kind of shifted and went back. And then I tried it again once I got back to kind of like a more normal routine. And I really found that I could really make it till noon without having eaten. And it took a bit, you know, and there was a phased approach to it as far as my energy levels. And if I went past a certain time, like if I got to that 2 o'clock mark, I was toast if I hadn't eaten anything. So we kind of, you know, like some ebbs and flows and just experimentation, but it's honestly been really good for me. I don't feel like I can't get through workouts, and even ones that are a little more on the intense side. Now I'm not going out and, you know, running a marathon or, you know, on a performance level without having eaten something, but just to get through the day. And it's honestly saved me so much time in the morning. You know, I really get right to work, and, you know, I have some caffeine in the morning, and I feel that between the caffeine and just drinking a lot of water, I can absolutely get to that kind of lunch hour before I have my first meal. And that's something that's been wildly different and eye-opening for me, because I didn't think I was able to do it. That may work for some people, but it's just not for me. And it's completely changed.
Yeah, you just inspired me to try it again, because I'd been trying it prior to you, and you said, oh, I'll never do that. I like my breakfast. And I struggled a little bit finding my routine with it. But I think what people might be wondering is, well, why are you pushing yourself to do this? What are the benefits that you found from intermittent fasting?
I really feel like, I mean, I feel that it has kind of controlled the weight a little bit. And I really become, because I'm not hungry, you know, like I'll be initially hungry, but I have, you know, if I have a, you know, a liter, half a liter of water, I'm like, I'm good. Yeah. And so then it opened up what I could do for the rest of the day. You know, like I can have a little more, you know, instead of being so regimented at lunch and dinner, it opened up to what I could have then. And I just kind of started to enjoy that more. I felt like I got a little more freedom in my diet versus like, I can only have this many calories at dinner. I can only have this many calories at lunch, this many at breakfast. And something that I've really more freedom with, especially as I've gotten older, is just making it lifestyle based. Like, listen, if I wake up and I am starving, I will eat. You know, I'm not going to say I absolutely can't. I try, but I'm like, if I just need to eat, I'll eat. Or if, you know, it's the weekend, I'm going out to breakfast or brunch with some friends or whatever, I'm not going to say, no, I can't eat. You know, so I don't beat myself up over it.
And being flexible with it. Yeah,
exactly. You know, because it has to be lifestyle based. And if you can't sustain that lifestyle, then it's ultimately not going to work long term.
I think what you said as well about making sure you've had enough water, I think that's the thing. Sometimes we often think we're hungry when we're thirsty. So sometimes if you just drink enough water, that hunger subsides, and it's actually your body just needing that hydration. So that's been the key for me as well. The caffeine, having a bit of caffeine and having water in it, it can make a difference. We're not prescribing this diet for everybody, but if it's people that want to try it, there are ways to be flexible and incorporate that into your life, which I think, you know, we've both found benefits with. And what other dietary principles do you follow, though? Do you prescribe to your clients that you found have worked for you in terms of weight loss, hunger management, and all those things that we strive for?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, the water, that's just such a huge aspect that I think people really underlook. I have it right here. I have my, my water bottle. I carry usually like a liter to a liter and a half because I cannot keep track of, oh, I had eight glasses a day. I won't do it that way. So it's like, I can keep track like, oh, I filled it up twice. I had 2 liters of water. Or I had 3 liters of water today. And it just gives me a much better frame of reference that I'm like, oh, I should have more. And if I see it, then I remember to drink it. Cause so many times it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
But for me, I make a lot of my meals at home. And I know that that's not for everyone. Not everybody has that luxury, but I genuinely love to cook. So I love being able to prepare my own food because I am a little neurotic about it. Like when you're going out to eat or, you know, these prepackaged foods, there's always more salt, sugar, fat, calories than you realize. And a little more refined and processed foods. So that's something that I really, you know, try to preach to my clients, or at least find healthy alternatives for that. You know, if they have a meal service where they can really dial in what it is that they need, but fresh food.
It sounds so simple, doesn't it?
I hate to say it, in America, they don't make it easy for you. You know, the amount of stuff we put in our prepackaged foods, I mean, the canola oils and all the salts and just the refined sugars and flours and carbs and things like that. It's really challenging. So when I'm making it, I know what's going in it.
Yeah, exactly. In the quickfire, you said your soup is your go-to healthy, nutritious meal. What is this? You know, you meal prep this, right? This is something that you do at the beginning of the week. Yeah, why is this the key ingredient?
You know, I genuinely love soup. And this is something that I had gotten the idea from. I love Panera Bread. Love Panera Bread. There's, you know, the pick two soup and salad. And they used to, I don't even think they have it anymore, but they had this vegetable soup and it had a little bit of pesto on it. And I loved it. It was just my favorite thing. So I was like, I think I can replicate this. So I have this massive pot and I just put in all these, you know, organic vegetables and soup and, you know, some olive oil and either fresh or frozen veggies. And I just let it simmer. And then I just divvy it up into little containers. So it's ready to go. So whether I take it with me or if I'm at home and pop it in the microwave and, you know, either pair that with, you know, a lean protein or a Greek yogurt and some fruit and, you know, whatever, you know, if I'm having a sweet potato or, you know, a slice of sourdough bread or whatever, I'm pairing it with a carb. It's just, I genuinely enjoy it. And then, you know, you make some pesto and throw a little dollop on top. It's just enjoyable. And there's so much, you know, water in it. There's so much fiber from the vegetables. And getting different varieties. I mean, I get multiple servings of vegetables from several different sources. I mean, like there's peas, carrots, celery, tomatoes, zucchini, broccoli, cauliflower. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many varieties. It's not like I just had broccoli soup, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel good about it and I genuinely enjoy it. And it's, you know, whether it's, you know, the vegetables feel fresh. So if it's hot and I'm like, oh, I'm having fresh vegetables. And if it's cold out, you know, I'm like, I'm having a nice warm soup.
Yeah. Do you know, it's so funny because I meal prep to an extent, but I never think to make soup. So that's a great idea for everyone. Actually, you do get the hydration and the fiber and making it varied every time.
Like if I get hungry at night, that's something I can just pop in and have a nice little kind of like, you know, midnight snack, if you will, that's healthy and actually fulfilling, you know, I'm not loading up with carbs or sugar. And it's just something that, you know, it's very comforting.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not something that I think many of us think about as that midnight snack or evening snack, but great idea, something to take away from here as well. And when it comes to our metabolism, obviously our diet and our nutrition is so important, but how have you found that your metabolism or again, those of your clients has slowed over the years? Because we both turned 40 and we do start to notice some
Excuse
of these changes
me.
You can't get away
Excuse
with outing our age here, but I don't know, because there's people listening that they will be feeling the same. Like, yeah, it just, there's little changes you start to notice. And I think metabolism and what you can get away with in your 20s, like eating whatever you want, doesn't hold true when you get into your late 30s and 40s and beyond.
I think that the biggest things that I've noted is, you know, like I said earlier, variation in my diet and exercise. The body is super good at adapting. So if you're doing the same type of exercise over and over, your body's going to adapt to it and you're just not going to get the same returns. And same with the diet. If you're eating the same foods, you know, like having those repeats, if you've been really good about, you know, being great all week, if all you do is diet, 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 and you're completely in a deficit or just like barely hanging on, your body needs those refeeds to like kind of like reset that metabolism and get back to it. So it's like, you know, if you look at from
What is a refeed to people that don't know?
It's almost kind of like a cheat day. Now, I'm not saying going out and just eat crap, but just be a little more liberal. Have you know, more foods or, you know, things that are necessary, maybe a little more calorically dense that you wouldn't normally have, but just bump up your calories. And like I said, don't eat just junk, but also, you know, allow yourself a little freedom to A, enjoy life, you know, because there's only so, you know, so long you can continue to do that and be restrictive. So give yourself a little reward, but also you bump up those calories, you refeed yourself, and then it doesn't feel like it's starving. Because if your body feels like it's just constantly in a deficit, you're going to start holding on to fat because it thinks it's dying.
It's in starvation mode.
And then the other is just recovery. You know, when I was 25, I could go, and, you know, hammer it hard, but I just can't do that anymore. And I find that I get a lot better results from having proper recovery, and my body just feels better, and I'm not as inflamed, and I look and feel better, and I'm more prepared for when I want to work hard the next time.
Yeah. And I'm in that place as well. Several injuries from overtraining over the years. And I find like sometimes we're talking to a group of people who you're trying to encourage to do more. And then there's that school of thought of the people that are just doing too much, thinking that more is better. So you're trying to sort of motivate the people that are barely doing anything and then give advice to those that are probably overtraining as to why they're not getting the results they're seeing. It's a balance, isn't it? You know, in terms of injury prevention,
absolutely,
active aging.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why you look at professional athletes and why they have a preseason, a regular season, a postseason, an off season. Like, it's very structured, you know, because it's been proven. I mean, this is scientific research. Yeah. I can say personally for me, like, there's definitely been challenges, and they're mostly mental, because I remember getting so obsessed with calories, being like, I have to burn this amount of calories today, you know, and that if I didn't, because I knew what worked as far as, you know, because I've done figure competitions and stuff, and you go into extremely restrictive modes, and that works in the short term. But you can, you know, I just got so obsessed over, like, I haven't burned enough calories today. And it's really not, I mean, it is calories in, calories out, but you do have to have that recovery. Otherwise, you probably do more harm than good.
Yeah. And I know both you and I are quite sort of geeky when it comes to feedback and measurements and, you know, Apple Watches and everything that gives us that kind of feedback and information. And you're very familiar with Lumen, our metabolic tracker as well, that determines what fuel you're using or that's in your system for training. And talk to me about that experience of using Lumen for our PowerPlate bike test that you did. You were part of a trial, weren't you? And you utilized this for feedback along the way.
I totally geek out on the data because I just find it fascinating where I can say, okay, well, what did I do differently today? Mm-hmm. You know, what was different from the last time? And I think keeping notes is really beneficial. Like, what did I have that day as far as exercise or just exterior stresses, things like that? Just keeping like a little bit of a diary. And I know that you do that as far as, you know, food logs and what we did for exercise that day. It was really fascinating to see like what my performance looked and felt like according, you know, my performance numbers, but also how easy or how challenging it felt to me that day. And then looking at the carbs or fat that I burned, you know, pre-workout, post-workout. And it was just really fascinating to how you can slowly manipulate that to really refine your results. And that was the thing that was just really kind of fascinating to me, that there's small little adjustments, but it's just being aware of what you're doing. And I think the more you're aware of that, the more you're like, oh, okay, it starts to become kind of second nature when you know what does and what doesn't work for you.
What did you learn about your body from that and how you utilize fuel? Was there anything surprising?
Yeah, I really think a lot of it really just it comes down to that heart rate. But, you know, when you're able to push your heart rate in really kind of like that steady state, because that's the thing, as you condition yourself, you're able to push that heart rate higher for a longer amount of time. And, you know, I know that they say that with, you know, you get into that fat burning mode, kind of like that steady state. But if you're able to, you know, kind of raise that heart rate at that steady state, I really saw more results from that. And times where I thought that I should have been burning more carbs because you're working more intensely, you know, it dropped out. So it was really fascinating and things that I didn't necessarily expect. So being able to push yourself more and having those, you know, whether it be interval training or, you know, out for a long run. Because that's one thing that I do love. I do love to run. So how you can manipulate those results in order to achieve what you're trying to get. And the things that you would genuinely enjoy. Because like you said, if I hate cycling, am I going to do it long term? So finding ways where you can really hit your sweet spot, if you will.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, it's a case of, well, what's the best way to burn fat, to rev up our metabolism? And I think there's this, should we do steady state exercise? Should we do high intensity exercise where we get the afterburn effect? What is the key ingredient and how individual is it, is the question.
It's very individual. Mm-hmm. What works for me may not necessarily work for you. I mean, when you look at the different body types, you know, like I am not a marathon runner. I'm a runner, but I am not a marathon runner. I don't have a marathon body type, you know, so looking at the adaptation that works for you, but also, like I said earlier, it's variety. You really need everything, you know? Yeah. I look back now, like when I was a high school athlete, like if I had had the, you know, strength and conditioning knowledge that I have now, I'm like, God, I would have been a beast. And so I feel a little cheated, you know, but like the way that, you know, it's come a long way, you know, like what athletes are exposed to now, but having that variation, being able to have strength training, being in your body, you know, like that, that muscle memory and stuff, you know? So I think from an early age, you get that strength training in, but also having those intervals and, you know, being able to have the variation in cardio, because HIIT is essentially, you know, cardio training. It's just not steady state. I think when people say cardio, they think, you know, you go out and run for an hour.
Long run,
and
it's cycle.
Yeah. And I think that those are important too, because they're so important for heart health, but also being able to have those variations in your heart rate in that interval training. So it's really a mix of both. And I think just, you know, finding like, okay, like if you really hate HIIT, maybe you incorporate it one day a week. It's better than nothing, you know? Yeah. So I think having that variation and being able to include in things that you need, or even, you know, adding a partner to it or adding a sport. Like I love to play tennis.
Yeah.
And if I can really get going, you know, like there's ways to really make things enjoyable and not just make it about pure exercise.
Yeah, you can make it HIIT and it could be sport. It doesn't have to be a prescribed workout. In terms of the training, you know, because when I think about HIIT, and you know this with me, I have knee injury and hip issue and whatever. So sometimes that high intensity training is a little bit too much for me. So I have to find variations. And I think the sort of the way our training looks through the ages, again, age 20, 30, 40, whatever, varies as well. What are those shifts in training from? We talked about, you know, in what you can get away with your diet from your 20s up until you get older. But in terms of training as well, how would you describe the ideal or what we can physically achieve and get the best from training through those kind of decades, if you like? And as we get older, what are the changes that we should be making to protect our body, but still, you know, keep that metabolism going and body burning fat?
A really interesting and a really smart question, because as our bodies, we're just not able to tax it like we used to, especially if you're talking about like, you know, joints and injuries and things. So a lot of ways to manipulate your intensity. So, okay, say you're doing an exercise, but you can't, you know, do the actual, like, you know, kind of ground and pound, if you will, you know, like say if it's a knee issue or whatever, like, okay, extend the amount of time you're doing that exercise and maybe, you know, in a non-impact way, or reduce your rest. You know, all of a sudden it's manipulating those things, or adding a load to it. Like, okay, I'm going to be doing a stepping jack, but I'm also going to have something, a weight that I'm pushing overhead. That increases the intensity with it as well. So I think there's ways to manipulate it with still being able to do movements that are safe and appropriate for your body and your injuries. But just, you know, adding those weight, taking away rest, you know, adding time to it, or maybe complexity of the movement. Like if you're doing a multi-joint versus just, you know, a bicep curl, you know, maybe you bring it into a bicep curl to an overhead press, that that changes things. And it's just small little things, but just being smart in your programming.
There's ways to do that, like you say, without the impact as well. But one thing that keeps being repeated is the importance of strength training as we get older. Because again, I think people tend to, walking's underrated. We should walk, we should get that movement in, as we always talk about. But strength, you can't beat strength training for our bone density, maintaining that muscle mass, and again, our metabolism. So why is this so important, and how do we continue to be strong as we get older as well?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I look at, you know, like some of my grandparents and things, I'm like, ooh, I do not want to be that frail old lady that can barely push the door open, you know? Mm. So we do lose a great amount of muscle mass as we age. So it's just so important to keep that up. And you and I have been through this where, you know, pushing pretty maximal amounts of weight for us. And at a certain point, you're like, okay, well, why am I doing this? Does it need to be maximal? Probably not. Am I pushing this much weight because I need to, or because it's cool? And I think that there's a balance to doing what's good for your body and reducing the risk of injury, but also keeping that strength training up, you know, for that, you know, muscle mass, which will help burn, you know, fat even at a rested state. So just by having more lean muscle, you're going to burn more fat just by existing.
Yeah.
Which that's a win-win.
Yeah.
But also, you know, that bone density as we age, and especially for women, being able to have that muscle protein synthesis that just helps the body work efficiently. So it's incredibly training, but you don't have to be out there, you know, pushing bodybuilding type of weight and stuff. You know, it's just about well, I guess it depending where you're starting from, whether you're maintaining or whether you're just, you know, slightly increasing, but, you know, just being able to be strong. And I think there's a massive confidence that comes with being strong, you know, because when I feel strong on the outside, I feel strong on the inside too. So I think
I
that
say
there's
that
a,
as well.
One hand feeds the other. I want to be as strong on the inside as I am on the outside, and vice versa.
Yeah. And I introduced you at the beginning, and, you know, it's true. You are a very strong woman. And I mean physically as well as mentally, and, you know, what you've done and overcome with your work and your life and so forth. And I think that's an important factor. Strength makes us feel better in ourselves as well. You feel capable or able to take on the world. And then what goes hand in hand with, you know, maintaining our training as we get older as well is our recovery. And we touched on this just a moment ago, like the importance of recovery. And I wish I knew of all these recovery methods when I was competing compared to what I know now. But what does recovery look like for most people? Because for some of us, it's jumping in ice baths and it's doing maybe some of the more extreme stuff that you do as an athlete or someone that trains hard. For other people that sort of training recreationally, it might look a little bit different. So what methods of recovery are there for us all or available to us to choose from?
I mean, there's so many. Like, first of all, just rest, taking some time off, especially
sounds
if you
simple.
Have an injury, which, it sounds simple, but it's extremely hard for me. And I know that it is for you, because I'm my own worst client. I would never tell my clients to do the things that I do, you know, but I'm different.
Do what I say, special. Not what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's just, you know, a matter of, like, there was a really serious hip flexor injury that I have, and it was just not getting better. Like, it just kept persisting. And it really took, and I thought, like, oh, I'll take a couple of days off. It'll be fine. And it wasn't getting better. And it really just took me taking that, you know, 1-2 weeks off to really allow it to heal, because all I was just doing was just re-injuring. But I was so kind of scared to not burn those calories that I just made it worse.
So rest, rest's a good one.
Rest, you know, stretching, massage, you know, self-myofascial release, all of those things, you know, those are huge with recovery. I mean, like when you talk about the ice baths and things like that, heat therapy and stuff. Gosh, I mean, there's so many things that are very expensive too. But when you look at what the average person can do, it's, I mean, really stretching, rest, ice, you know, like there's just so many.
Yeah, you talked before at the beginning about, you know, I asked you about your number one way to achieve a good night's sleep. And you I've just remembered now, you mentioned being hydrated as well before bed, because obviously sleep's a massive factor when it comes to recovery as well. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more? Because when most people are told, you know, this is the way to sleep better, you're told, get rid of the blue light in the room and, you know, don't eat too close to bed, all those different things. But I hadn't thought about the fact we need to be hydrated to sleep effectively. Can you share a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I'm hungry, I have a really hard time sleeping. Like, I don't know if it's mental or it's probably more mental than anything, but like, you know, but again, like we said, I'm probably not hungry. I'm probably thirsty. So being able to kind of like reload up on that water, and if you're dehydrated, you know, susceptible to cramps and things like that, just not feeling good, you know, and when you're kind of had that homeostasis, you know, and because if you're hydrated, you're more likely to have a better electrolyte balance and things like that. So, but just for me, and this is something that, you know, I really learned kind of the hard way with, you know, cocktails at night. If I've gone and I've had, you know, some wine, or I've been out and had some drinks beforehand, my sleep is not great. So that's one of those things that I really am cognizant of, like really, really hydrating before I go to bed. And even if I have to get up in the middle of the night and use the restroom, it's better than just...
I was just about to say that. I was going to say, a lot of people will be going, well, I'm going to need to pee all through the night.
But a lot of times I do anyway. So it's like, if I'm up and restless because I'm not well hydrated versus whether I'm hydrated, I get up, I use the restroom, then I'm able to fall right back asleep. So that's just really been what I've found. My whole life is better when I'm properly hydrated. You know, I feel better, I look better, my skin, my eyes, everything.
Yeah.
But because you start to just feel kind of gross.
It's a great tip. And just pivoting a little bit now, I want to talk as a personal trainer. you probably have heard every barrier to exercise and eating healthily an excuse under the sun. I think, you know, from lack of time, there's so many of them. So I think what's probably quite useful is to let's identify what those barriers are to living a healthy life and help address each one for people. So what are the top barriers to exercise that you come across with clients or friends or anyone in your life as to why they can't exercise, why they can't eat healthily or do what they need to do?
Yeah, I think the number one excuse that I get from people, and it's not unreasonable, but time. Yeah. You know, I don't have enough time, you know, whether it's work constraints or family commitments or all of these things. You know, we only have 24 hours in a day, and, you know, we spend hopefully 6 to 8 of them sleeping. You know, so there's a lot of time restraints there. And, you know, you had touched on earlier the importance of walking and just movement in general. And that's something that I really preach to my clients. Like, okay, listen, I really think you need to get an extra hour of walking in a day. I think everybody would be better off if they just, you know, and Brissy, this isn't a casual stroll, but just walking with the purpose here, you know, whether it's uphill, whatever you're doing, just get more daily movement in. And, you know, I get that if you don't have an hour stretch, you can just do that. So I'll say, like, okay, if you can't do it for an hour, break it up into 2 30-minute sessions. If you can't do that, break it up into 4 15-minute sessions. And it's also really helpful. Like, if you've been sitting at a desk all day, get up and move, because that energizes me. I know when I sit in front of a computer for a while, like, I've got to get up and do something. Otherwise, like, I just start to fade. Yeah. So just moving more. But everybody can find 15 minutes somewhere. If that's taking your dog for a walk, if that's pushing the kid in the stroller, if that's catching up with your spouse before dinner, or making a work call while you're out, you stick in your headphones and go. So I think a lot of people make excuses that they don't have time, but there are manageable ways to do it. And ultimately, if it's important for you, you'll make the time. So how important is it to you is really ultimately what that question comes down to.
Yeah. So we can make the time. We can make the time for the things that matter to us, in other words. So it's about making the outcome matter to you enough.
100%. Making this a lifestyle. You know, this isn't something that you do once a week. How do you be consistent with this every day? Because I think, you know, variety and consistency are really the keys to success, whether it be fitness or nutrition.
Yeah. And that's important as well. But for you and I, we know why we exercise. We know why we get up and we train and we make healthy choices. Sometimes it's because we have a goal of filming a fitness app or an event or something like that that's motivating us, or just because it's ingrained in us in our lifestyle from always having been an athlete. But that's not the case for everybody. And I think finding your why or your motivation can be difficult for a lot of people. How do we do that? How do we find our motivation if it's not as obvious for some people as it is for others?
Yeah. I mean, I think ask yourself what you like. Mm-hmm. You know, are you a social person? Like, all right, find a friend, find a family member. And if you don't have that, there are a million groups that you can find via social media, you know, websites and stuff, running clubs, you know, whatever it is. You know, maybe it's something, maybe you're not super, you know, athletic and you're not a runner, but you could go out for a walk. You could walk up a hill, like a nice hike, some scenery. Find somebody to keep you accountable, whether that's, you know, I've done that before, like, you know, with one of my other good friends, Amanda's, you know, I was like, oh God, I don't want to work out today. Like, I need to go on a hike, but I don't want to. I'm unmotivated. And she was like, go out there and do it. And she's like, take a picture from the top for me. So I'm like, damn it. I can't phone it in, you know, like I gotta send a picture up there. And she's like, you better be in it. So you're not just, you know, a picture of the mountains I could have found off Google. So, you know, being accountable to somebody else often is more motivating than being accountable to yourself.
That's interesting. An accountability buddy.
Accountability buddy. You don't want to disappoint somebody else. You know, a lot of times we're okay with disappointing ourselves, but not other people. So
interesting. And the other barriers, you know, I tend to hear are people saying, well, I'm too busy at work, or I'm traveling. You know, it's those on the go excuses, if you like, family commitments, all those kind of things. And obviously, like you said, you make time for the things that are important. But what are some useful tips on keeping your exercise going whilst you're traveling, or whilst your schedule is not routine, it's being thrown out of whack all the time? How do we kind of make those good choices in those situations? Because that's when it gets hard.
It does. And that's something that's actually been kind of a little eye-opening for me, you know, with the pandemic. And then I also transitioned to a new job. So previously, you know, like as a personal trainer, I'm in the gym. It's very easy for me to work out, you know, and then the pandemic came, the gyms were shut down, all of a sudden that changed. And so we were, we were working out on your rooftop, or I was, you know, working out in my living room. And so you had to get creative. So but that was a priority. So there's always ways to do that. But if you're traveling, if you're at work, apps have really come a long way in the last, you know, two fitness apps in the last 2-3 years. And that's something that I've found has been really helpful for me, actually, because I travel a lot now with work and all, you know, whether it's in my hotel room or whatever, even if it's, you know, during my lunch break, you know, I can eat real quick and then do 45 minutes, you know, a 30, 45 minute workout.
Yeah.
There's somebody to walk you through it. If you're not motivated that day, but like, just turn it on and just do what they say versus coming up with, you know, figuring out whatever you have to come with on your own. And, you know, and obviously as trainers, we have a leg up on that. We're very knowledgeable about it. And not everybody is. So listen to other people that can do the hard work for you and do it with them. And at the end of it, I've never got done saying like, man, I wish I hadn't done that. I'm always like, all right, I did it. You know, I didn't want to, but I did it, you know, and I struggle with motivation sometimes, especially when you do get busy. It's like, you're tired.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know, sit and watch a Netflix, but you know, I got a stationary bike during the pandemic because I couldn't get, I'm like, I have to do something. So I'll turn on Netflix and I'll just watch my hour show and pedal along. So it's just something, you know, I can still do something I enjoy with something maybe I enjoy a little less. But at the end of the day, after I did, I'm like, okay, I'm glad I did that. I got to catch up on my show and I feel good.
Yeah. The, what is the saying? You only ever regret the workout you didn't do or, you know, something along those lines. And it's so true. And I think the sort of the final sort of barrier for some people, and it sort of ties into the idea of fitness apps as well, is confidence to go into a gym. And that could be body consciousness, or it could be just confidence to not to know what you're doing with the equipment. You know, for us, like you said, we know what to do and how to structure a program. For some people that are new to this, it might be quite intimidating. So I think the fitness apps are a really good way to start as well, aren't they? And just gaining that confidence and having someone tell you what to do. Jen, it's been a pleasure talking to you because I get to talk to you all the time, but to sort of really sort of dig into some of the reasons why and the tips that we discussed is fantastic. And what's next for you? What's going on with you right now? And where can people find you as well for more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have recently really got more involved in a company that I've worked with in the past, but it's an app called True Connect. Mm-hmm. It's a great app and they've really started branching out with other partners. And so I've come on and started working with them in a more behind the scenes capacity just versus being, you know, on the actual fitness videos and whatnot. So I've been really looking into how we expand this kind of global fitness ecosystem, and whether it be, you know, like sustainable workout apparel, you know, clean supplements and proteins and things like that, and nutrition, and just being able to provide exciting and a variety of fitness modalities, with also providing ways for people to recover, the education piece. And that's something I write a monthly health and wellness column for the American Legion magazine, which the organization that I'm a part of, and really providing fitness tips, whether it's, you know, fitness or nutrition, but how do we reach a broader audience to just create a more healthy, sustainable world? And that's something that I'm really passionate about on how we can just, you know, especially in areas like America where you see so much obesity and things like that. Like, how do we change that culture?
Yeah, fantastic. And where can we find you?
My website is jennifercampbellpt.com and I am on the True Connect app. And if you are a veteran, please subscribe to the American Legion, get a part of that organization, and the American Legion magazine. I have a monthly column there as well.
Fantastic. Pleasure as always, Jen. Thank you so much for joining us on the Health Tech Podcast. Chat to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening to the Health Hack Podcast with myself, Caroline Pierce. Each episode provides a healthy dose of health hacking. So make sure to hit subscribe or follow so you don't miss out. I would be truly grateful if you could rate and review wherever you're listening to help others seeking inspiring stories and health hacks to find us. The Health Hack is an Insanity Podcast production and powered by Lumen. See you next time.